All right, so should we talk about this very, I don't know, hard-hitting episode of Leverage?
This very prescient episode of Leverage, 9 years early.
Hits different now.
Definitely hits different now. And, like, trying to remember how I enjoyed it when it first came out is interesting. Like, did I think, oh, this is not serious, or did I realize how serious it was? I don't remember. It was a more innocent time.
Yeah.
2012. Who knew we'd be saying that? Okay. Yeah. And with that, let's start. Hi, everybody. It's Christina, and I've got Robin here with me.
Hello.
We're going to be talking about the rundown job today. This episode aired on this is a weird one, and in a little bit you're also going to hear the second part of this, I guess, because on September 16th 2012, the rundown job aired at 9 p.m I'm guessing Eastern, and the frame up job aired right after it, because this is a special half and half, like the boys night out and the girls night out episodes last season,
and it's the mid-season finale.
Mm-hmm.
Right, for season 5.
I think I did not know that
it was a split, because season 5 is a split season.
Yeah,
many seasons. Yeah, because the next episode doesn't air till November 27th.
Yeah, so this was the mid-season finale, so they did the double header.
And this one's so confusing because on IMDb they have it flip-flop, so it's frame up, rundown, and then everything else, the wikis, the DVDs are rundown, frame up. So
yeah, I have the Amazon seasons that I bought, and it's rundown first, then frame up.
So weird. So yeah, so I scheduled things out of order. So when you listen to the frame up job, we're going to be talking like this episode did not exist, because it did not at that point.
I mean, I haven't heard that episode, so for me it hasn't happened.
There you go.
So if I make any duplicate jokes, they're all new to me.
Oh yeah, no, that's fine.
Who's on the frame job?
It's Lisa.
Okay,
you guys are back to back to back right now, just flip-flopping. But yeah, so the rundown job aired on September 16th 2012. It was, to me, unsurprisingly directed by Dean Devlin, because he always does the ones that are more like, this is just a small movie.
It's very cinematic and shot very differently than most Leverage episodes. Like, it almost feels, not the plot of it, but the actual, like, cinematography of it feels like they did a crossover episode with some other show.
Yeah. I'll get to that in a second, because that's so true. And there's reasons behind that. So it was written by Chris Downey, John Rogers, and Josh Scher. So in this one, we have our trio are in Washington, D.C., and they team up with an old partner of Elliot, who is a counterterrorism specialist, to stop a biological weapon from being released in Washington, D.C. So it's a double hit for you.
It's great.
Yeah, love it.
So I live in Washington, D.C., and I spent a lot of time watching this episode, paying very close attention to, like, what could plausibly be D.C. and what is clearly not. And, like, on the whole, they did a better job of duping D.C. than a lot of shows do. But also, there are some things.
Yeah. That's funny. I was watching something the other day, and they were in DC and they went into the subway or the metro, whatever y'all call it. And I was like, oh, that's actually there, because it's, at least all the stations I was in, it's like that really distinctive, like
the coffered ceiling.
Yeah. I was like, yes, that's real. That's actually in DC. So just for my one time of going.
There are some shows I know with, like, the West Wing and Bones and Criminal Minds, I think Criminal Minds did it too, like, that are set in DC, they'll do things where if they have enough episodes written out ahead of time, they would come to DC and like film a bunch of little scenes, mm-hmm. or they would just film like scenes of people walking around outside that they could like
the interstitial
like things. Cut in. Yeah.
Like, oh, here's a black SUV driving down a well-known DC street. And we know that Booth and Brennan are inside.
Exactly. Although they did, for Wonder Woman 1984, which is set in DC, they did actually film that here, including taking over kind of a, I don't want to say derelict mall, but it's like the dying mall. They just like rented out the whole mall.
That's what I was watching. And I was like, oh, that is actually the DC.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. But before we're actually in DC, we're on a farm in Virginia called Casey Farm, which all of the internet agrees is a reference to Colonel Casey from Chuck, played by Adam Baldwin, who we'll meet in a moment. Fun fact I did not know until I was listening to the commentary. I knew that Adam Baldwin had acted with Timothy Hutton and, of course, Christian Kane, but I didn't realize like he and Dean Devlin are like best friends.
That's funny.
Like he was a groomsman in Dean Devlin's wedding. Best friend.
So how did it take 5 seasons for him to show up on Leverage?
I don't know. Was Chuck still on?
Was it on yet? Maybe.
I mean, let me see. Yeah, they met on the set of 2007 to 2012.
Okay.
So
I was also trying to remember if Christian Kane and Adam Baldwin acted together on Angel or not.
He said in the commentary, Christian Kane was in the commentary, and he said they like beat each other up a lot, or they're always trying to kill each other on Angel. So, but it's been a long time since. It looks like Chuck ended on January 2012. So,
okay.
I mean, not that I don't know how far ahead they record this, but obviously he had time. He had some free time on a schedule. So, so on this farm, we see this farmer complete in overalls come out and yell at this man who's like working in his barn that their 3-month rental agreement is up and he wants him out. And the guy, his name's Udall, is like super creepy. And
very, very creepy.
Very creepy, and says, oh, you know, we suffered some delays, or we're back on track. And then has some guy grabs the farmer, and then he injects the farmer with something, with like a very futuristic looking injector. Not like
It looks like something you would see on like Star Trek, or yeah. And maybe that's the way things are now. I don't know.
No idea. This is not a small farmer, and this thug just like bodily drags this conscious man.
I don't think we ever see these thugs again.
No.
This is my one of the nitpicks I have with this episode, is that this scientist sometimes appears to be acting alone and doing everything all, and it's like his own personal crusade. But then he has a lot of like hired goons around.
He's got hired goons, and also he has the money to contact really bad people who can make stuff happen.
Yeah. It just seems a little, and I know that this was an episode that got a really tight edit.
Yeah.
And they had to cut a fair amount of stuff because it was running long. So maybe there was more of an explanation there, but I was just like, yeah, like, maybe he went down to Goons R Us and was like, hello, I would like to pay for some goons because I'm about to get evicted by this farmer and I don't want to be. And they, people were like, I'll goon for you.
Am I nothing on right now? Let's go. I don't know. Yeah. And maybe something was cut, like he's being bankrolled by some bigger bad. I don't know. But it flips to a congressional hearing room where Colonel Vance is being questioned and like yelled at, because he's basically doing for the government what Nate does four people who are screwed over, where he's gathering different people with different specialties and using them to combat terrorism. And that's against the rules.
Congress is not into that.
It's not okay. Because he's got the CIA operating domestically. They've got the FBI shooting up Rome, like an agent shooting up Rome.
One cafe.
Like, let's not be ridiculous, sir. It was just one cafe. Who amongst us has not shot up one cafe in Rome?
I mean, I would totally watch that.
Right? That sounds fun. But yeah, they're not excited, and they don't throw the book at him, but they find him and all of his operations in violation of the Interagency Security Act.
And say, like, we will arrest you.
Yeah, if you do this again, you're in really big trouble. And he, you know, he says, like, all of the terrorists around the world, like, know what our rules are. Like, it's not going to work. We can't fight them if we are so slow going through all these hoops to do this. And which, you know, might come back and be an important thing to think about for the rest of this episode.
Could be. We'll keep an eye on it and see if thematically if that resonates in any way.
I do like this line. The congressman said, "These slow giant agencies you mock were designed by very smart people." And he says, "So was the Titanic." And you're like, "Oh, touche. Touche."
Yeah.
Then we get a fun... So by the way, like, we haven't mentioned this already, but this episode doesn't really... I mean, this right here is, but there's not a heist or a big con in this episode. It's straight up action movie. They even say, like, it's very 24.
Yeah.
And, okay, you know, to be off topic again, but you were saying it feels like it's shot more cinematically. They shot it with a different camera than they've shot anything else before, like a 5,000 something, and when they usually use 4. But then they took the 5,000 and they, like, downgraded it a little so it didn't look as nice as it could have, I guess. It does feel completely different.
And yeah, just like all the way it's shot, like, there's different angles and I think part of it is because it doesn't have the normal heist hallmarks that you see in Leverage. Like, it doesn't have flashbacks the same way, and you're not getting close-ups of them, like, doing lifts and things to show how the crimes are committed. But yeah, it feels like an episode of 24, or like a Jack Reacher novel where he is working with his buddies to it has that vibe.
Yeah There's only like one time where they pretend to be somebody else, and the only costume change is a pair of glasses. Like,
he takes off a jacket.
It's true. But this is our only kind of little heist that we get, and we're just catching the fun part, the tail end. And it's at Castleman Security, which are the bad guys from The Homecoming Job, episode 2, season 1.
Oh, hey. Okay.
Stick it to them.
Nice.
I'm glad we can do this again. And we've got this is so funny because there's two guards going down a hallway, and the elevator opens and Hardison's there, and they have their guns trained on him. And he's just like, "Sup, Elliot?" and they're
confused. He doesn't even look up from his phone.
Yeah, and they're like, "What?" And he's like, "Not talking to you." Oh, he just says it much more nonchalantly than that. And they turn around, and Elliot has, like, risen up behind them, and then he fights them.
They are just, like, magic in this episode. There isn't even the pretense of, like, how the three of them get around, because they do this again in a little bit where, like, suddenly Parker just appears from nowhere, and like people just appear out of, and like Hardison hacking things. It's not like there's the barest hand waving towards how he could do, like, he hacks a doorbell at one point, or just like a button that this guy has that somehow he could hack into. And I mean, it's great. It's just, I think I actually appreciate that they didn't try really hard to like have an explanation for something. It's like, yeah, we panned over the ceiling. Parker wasn't there. And then Parker drops out of the ceiling. She's just that good.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we've spent 5 years them proving it. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't have time for techno babble in this episode. There's too much to do. We don't have time for like watching Parker crawl through air ducts.
But we do have time for Hardison doing the full, like, or their full shout out to Sherlock.
Yes.
Where, and apparently that was just Dean Devlin, like, had watched Sherlock and was really into that. So he just stole the like visualization.
And I think it's a good
homaged.
Exactly. Because the episode before this, the broken wing job, there's also writing on the screen because we're seeing Parker working through when she's like in the alley and she's looking at their getaway car and she's like processing all of that. And at the time, I remember this very well because I was editing this episode yesterday. At the time, I was like, it's weird that they're using this technique. They've never used it before. And I don't really love it because they only use it for that scene. And they didn't, like, if they'd incorporated it more into the episode, I would have been cool with it. But then this episode uses this. So we're seeing kind of how Hardison is working. And then in the next episode, Nate also has something on the screen when he's working through stuff. So then it becomes this kind of like 3-episode arc of this stylistic choice that they've started to make. And I'm okay with it.
Yeah, it's also, it's a nice way of getting around, like making sure that everyone is on the same page without having to do a lot of really tough exposition.
Camera angles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you don't have to like be like, okay, now we have to look over Aldous's shoulder at his laptop. You know, you can just like keep the shot on him with the people in the background. But yeah, so he's turned off the cameras and Parker drops down from the ceiling and Hardison plugs them into the vault door and he opens it up himself. And he's like... As like a romantic gift, he took care of the motion sensors, but he's going to leave the lasers for her. And she's got a minute 40. And so she does, she takes off her jacket and he asks her if she wants a kiss for luck. And she says, who needs luck?
It's very cute.
It's so cute. It's just really good chemistry. Then she like backbends into the space and does her gymnastics across. And he's just kind of like, yeah, the whole time.
Well, yeah, he's like, I never get tired of this, and puts his hand back, and Elliot just kind of like does the little handshake, but Elliot is like, I know you love your girlfriend, like, okay,
yeah.
The laser thing, it's tough because they have to cover the stunt double's face because they have a gymnastics double for Beth, but it does bother me that her hair was down. Because then they have to like animate the lasers after. Right. And so like there were a couple spots where like she's doing a move and there's no lasers there at all. Like it just.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's hard.
I don't think there's a good way to do that unless you can do the full like. Whatever that movie was originally that did it the first time.
Yep.
Entrapment.
Yep. Catherine Zeta-Jones, yes.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's still cool when she does it, because that's another callback, because we haven't seen her do that in a while. There are a few callbacks in this episode. Obviously, we had that first one. And then we see them outside of the Capitol building. So, hey, by the way, we're in D.C.
That was a nice cut. They, like, cut to the Capitol building and then pan down into a park, which I, to the best of my knowledge, there is not a park by the Capitol building that looks like that, although I don't hang out in that area very often. It's probably just a place in Portland, but it was a very smooth, and it looks like the kind of place you would find in BC.
But Hardison is talking to their client, and, you know, kind
Sister
of
Agnes.
Yes, Sister Agnes. And they're going to mail the things that they took out of the vault, which is a case of diamonds.
Yeah, of course it is.
So Hardison's like, you should be able to buy four. No, you should be able to buy eight new schools with these diamonds.
I was really sad that that wasn't Sister. I want to say Sister Lupe. But yeah. Is that?
But she wasn't a real nun.
I thought she was.
No, she's like sitting on Elliot's lap at the end of that episode.
Oh, you're right. Okay.
Yeah. Hurley meets her and she's in a bikini.
That doesn't mean she can't be a nun.
Nuns
can wear a bikini. Maybe. I am not Catholic. I don't know.
I do not think they can. Parker is a little sad that she cannot keep even just one of these diamonds, though. And Hardison reminds her, road to redemption. Just think how good it's going to feel when you get that Christmas card from those orphans. And hell, we may even get Elliot to smile. And they're like, ha ha ha, we finished this job. We're all jovial. But Elliot gets a phone call and he automatically does not like what he sees on the screen.
And the other two notice immediately that like something is up.
Yeah. And he answers and he says, like, how did you get this number, Riley? And it's this, okay, does this guy not look like the congressman at the beginning?
Yeah, a little bit.
I was like, is this the same man?
Well, no, because one's got a bow tie and one's got a tie tie.
And that is the only difference. Yep.
No, you're right. They look very much the same. I just was like, oh, small wizened white dude. Okay, there's a few of them around.
Yeah, so I was like, is does the congressman want him to do a job for him? So yeah, apparently the minute Elliot shows up in DC, the rumor mill is a rolling, and he heard about him and he's got a job for him that's right there in town and has to be that morning. But Elliot says, you know, I don't do that anymore, confirming more rumors that it's true that he's out of that business. And Riley says, that's like Picasso throwing away his paintbrush. But then he's like, all right, bye. And, you know, Parker and Hardison are like, all right, yeah, you don't do that thing anymore. So we're just going to keep walking, kind of like trying to take him away from, I don't know if they think he's going to relapse and do this or something, but they're just like, moving on, let's go.
I think it's just like, awkward, let's go.
Yeah. But he's stops and makes this point. He's like, just because I'm not doing this job doesn't mean it's not going to get done. Like, they're not going to do it as well as I would, but, or as good as I would, as good as I would, but it's going to happen.
And that feels like the big change in Elliot's character, because like when we first met him in season one, he was already not killing people. So like if he had never met the crew, he would not have taken this job, but he might not have stopped the job.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was kind of, I think he would have been much more passive about it, and like that's the shift.
Yeah,
that his character like, made to be like, oh, now I'm gonna stop the killing, not just not do the killing.
Yeah.
I also realized that there was an important thing that we've missed that we didn't talk about, which is Elliot's haircut.
Yes.
It's very important because he cut his hair to like a regular haircut. It's not like shoulder length and feathered.
I know. It's really sad. He said Dean Devlin told him he should do it, so he cut his hair.
I mean, it looks really good.
Yeah.
And I feel like from an internal perspective, the way it makes sense for me on the show is that if he found out they had to go to DC and like he looked at the weather and saw what the humidity level is, it was like, that's right. DC is built on a swamp, and like looks to one side and sees like all of his hair tools and looks to the other side and sees a pair of scissors. And it's like the humidity though. Like, Okay, but so yeah, Elliot has cut his hair and it's amazing.
It's really good.
And I feel like that does also lead to the like, wow, this is a different feeling episode. Yeah. Just the haircut.
And they all have, and like Parker's wearing this like interesting getup that has like a strange neckline.
Yeah, she has like a bralette almost.
It's like one of the precursors to those like, I want to call them bondage bras. What are they like? Cage like, bras.
Yeah, it's almost like she has a racerback tank on backwards under another tank. It's a great look. It's all black and like.
Yes, very cat burglar.
Hardison's dressed like Hardison.
Mm-hmm. And Elliot has like a red t-shirt with like a Chinese character on it.
I looked that up because I was curious what it was, and it says wolf. It means wolf. And apparently that was like a deliberate thing.
Okay, Nadine. The costume person for leverage. Interesting. They didn't mention that in the commentary, and I haven't seen it. I want to know.
I read, I think I saw that on John Rogers' blog.
Yeah. It's always like the last thing that I check. I don't know why. Because I figure everybody else has checked there.
Yeah.
So, yes, his hair is done, and he's decided we have to stop whatever job I just turned down. So they go to Riley, and we see that he has a button under his desk that he pushes, and it calls
a goon.
Yeah, it calls a goon.
It's his goon button.
The goon.
He might have a Diet Coke button too.
And after his bad guy leaves, Elliot comes in, and the second he sees Elliot, like he starts like really like hitting that button. Because Elliot says, I already told you I ain't in the game anymore, but I can't let this go. So I'm going to need
And he has the great line of, a lot of people, this is the last thing they ever see, is that that's not true for me, right? But it's like, it's said very cool.
Yeah. And, you know, he's like pushing this button pretty casually. Because he's coolly said, "This I'm probably not going to die, but I don't think he really believes it." And he questions why Elliot quit in the first place. And he tells him that he started running with different people. And, you know, he's still pressing the button. He's like a hacker. And Hardison walks in, like, he's just carrying a laptop around. His arm must be killing him. Nope, he has great muscles in his arms. He's fine.
Mm-hmm. Also, I assume he has some sort of rig.
Yeah.
That, like, helps, you know, distribute the weight so it's not all on his wrist.
Yeah.
He's got to be aware of carpal tunnel. That's like the number one thing that takes out hackers.
Mm-hmm. And he's also running with a thief. And Parker, oh yeah, because Riley goes to pull a gun and he shoots at Elliot, but the gun is empty because apparently Parker is so good. She can appear out of nowhere, open a drawer, take all the bullets out of the gun and close it again.
Yep, that's what I mean, though. Like, is just magic.
It's so good. So Elliot's like, yeah, I'm gonna need that file. Then he hands it over. And Parker brings out our favorite toy and stun guns him. So looking at this file, they see that there's a hit out on this woman and who they've got full surveillance on, and including her timeline, and she gets off her train from work in 15 minutes. So they book it. And they're in Greer Park. Do you know Greer Park?
I don't think that's a real
place.
So this is though where they get like, I know that some of this got lost in the edit, but it doesn't really make sense to me that there's apparently a hit taken out on this woman like through a third party. Right, or like the villain takes a hit out on her, presumably through this middleman, who then like has time to have like a printed out file, but then calls Elliot the day of and is like, I heard you were here. You want to kill this lady for some cash? And when he says no, there's just like another sniper there already. So I don't know if he was gonna, if he like had the sniper and then realized like, oh, Elliot's even better.
Yeah.
Hey, Hitman, I'm gonna hire a better version of you, but like, you're my backup. Or was it like he was somewhere else and it was some other part of the plan, or had some other hit and he was like, oh, can you squeeze this one in the morning? Like, sorry, minion. I know you wanted to like go to your kid's recital this morning, but like, I need you to do a quick hit. Like, it just,
oh, he had a dozen time. He was gonna go golf.
Yeah, it just feels like weird. It doesn't quite line up to me of like, why was he calling Elliot so close to when the hit would be? And I don't know.
Yeah, that is a good point. Like, but I don't know what the time span was from the call to showing up. Like,
DC's not that big,
right? The traffic, like, is bad though.
But I don't think this was like hours and hours, you know, like half hour, maybe 1 hour.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That makes a lot of sense. Also, Elliot, does he do sniping? Does he?
I think he's good with all forms of weaponry.
I'm so sorry.
But, or maybe it's that's Elliot. The thing. Maybe it wouldn't have been a sniper. Maybe that was not the ideal situation. Because it's not that she has to get killed by a sniper.
Yeah.
Right. She just has to get killed. Oh, that works. So the idea, if you were to get Elliot, he would do something like up close and like maybe not as big of a, like as public of a thing, but because he couldn't get Elliot, Batty had to go with the sniper.
Yeah. And maybe like something that's not going to cause mass panic in Greer Park.
Yeah. Well, like snipers in DC, it's not, it's a weird thing because people still definitely remember like the DC snipings that happened in, I want to say 2004.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. And that was like all over the region. And that was a very real like fear, like a visceral fear for a lot of people that you still like still has ramifications. But also with that, you walk around and there are, you know, armed guards on the top of the White House all the time. There are armed guards on the roof of the FBI building. So like, you frequently see people walking around on the roofs of the Smithsonian's who may or may not be armed. And that's just like part of the deal is like, like when I go to the bus stop at the Pentagon, which is one of the major places to change buses in Northern Virginia, it's like you, 10,000 commuters waiting for your bus, and then a bunch of guys with very big machine guns just like hanging out.
Yeah.
So like it's a weird dichotomy between like there are very big guns very close to you all the time, but also this very real fear of like, you know, within people's memory, that time that a bunch of people got shot gassing up their cars.
Yeah.
So a sniping like this would probably attract an awful lot of attention, which is maybe not what they wanted for this part of the plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that would have made people, I think, really like, okay, what's going on? Why did this guy do this? And what else is going on around here? Which they did, like, because they show up in mass really fast after this happens. But before we get to that, Elliot, because this whole scene here is really iconic for the whole series, I think, because Elliot kind of assesses the area that they're in. By the way, that is not an actual subway exit. It like goes down into like a storage area for this restaurant or something. But, you know, he says, you know, you want to take somebody out in an open place like this, like you can't do it up close. So he probably would have taken her somewhere else, I guess.
He probably could have charmed her and like,
yeah, as he does in a little bit. You know, so he says, okay, the only thing is a sniper on the roof, clear line, right to the clear line of sight to the subway exit. And he's like, okay, it's behind me, don't turn around. But we see that there's a sniper up on the roof setting up. And Elliot's like, okay, I'm going to keep her alive. You guys have to figure out a way to get her out of here. And Hardison's like, well, with what? And then we get another callback. You stole a Michelangelo with tinfoil and chewing gum. Figure it out.
He's very grouchy. He's peak grouchy.
He's peak grouchy in this episode, but they pointed this out in the commentary. Like, it's not, like, I think that's the last time you see him be grouchy. Because as soon as they figure out, like, how big a deal this is, like, there's no joking around. Like, we're 100%
not business. Until the end. It comes back, like, at the end after everything is okay.
That's true.
It's a good point.
Yeah. And it's 100%, like, trust all the way. But we'll get to that, too. Eventually.
They, by the way, that is not only is that not a real subway stop, but that is not the DC subway map, which we call the Metro.
Thank you.
And they've had DC subway up all over on all the signs. And I'm like, and I know, and there's copyright issues.
Okay.
But it's weird that, because I don't know that Metro is copywritten. It's weird that they can't say, like, Metro stop or something. But you get a shot of the map a couple of times, which, like, the colors are correct, but it's not the later when we see the actual subway, that it doesn't look anything like the subway cars or nothing, because Portland has, like, one subway stop, I think.
Yes, one underground subway stop.
We can go check it out someday when we go to Portland.
Totally. It's near the zoo, apparently.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. It's also the deepest subway system. We should talk about this when we get to the subway part.
Yeah. But side note, they should have had a zoo episode.
Oh my God, yes. Let's go steal a gorilla.
They could have had a scene where you think that Elliot is going to have to fight a tiger, and then it cuts to them just being friends.
Yes.
And Parker would ride an elephant.
We already
Hardison
know that.
Would step in a lot of poop.
Hardison's hanging out with the monkeys because he has a special bond with the snow monkey. Was it from the broken limb job? Yeah, there's like a little monkey in that one. Anyways, so they should have done that in the zoo. Elliot goes over to Teresa, who is the mark, and asks if she knows where the Manderley Hotel is, which is a reference to Rebecca.
Yeah. Okay. You also see the Manderley Hotel later.
Oh, nice.
And that is the most DC thing of this entire episode, is random person coming up to you on the street and being like, not rude, but like very in your face about, like, hi, do you know where this thing is?
Because they're like, I can't find the Smithsonian.
Like, right. Excuse me, do you know where they keep the ruby slippers? And you're like, yeah, but like, I'm in the middle of, okay, yeah, go there, go four blocks and then turn left and you'll see it. Like, okay. the worst is when people ask you where something is and you're literally standing in front of it and you're like, it's this, like, you're here.
You did all the work, babe. You didn't need to ask.
But that part I was like, yep, that feels like DC, all right. That's why she just takes it in stride, because like, people will do that to you.
That's funny. Yeah, I bet. It makes a lot of sense. And then he's like, he thanks her and he's holding her hand and she's like, oh, you have a really strong grip. And he's like, yeah, sorry about that. It's because I gotta do this. And then he's also standing up on like a ledge a little above her obviously most of all to block the sniper's view of her. And I just think it's hilarious because I'm like, oh, look, Elliot's taller than somebody
for once. not for long,
because then he like has to pick her up and kind of throw her behind a hot dog stand. And Christian Kane was like, look how I like pick her up and try not to throw her on the ground. Like, he was trying really hard to like gently place her back down, which is really sweet because later he's not as gentle with the actor he's working with.
No.
But the sniper starts shooting and people are screaming and running for cover. And Hardison gets, we see that, yeah, Hardison has gone up to the street vendor and asks for two and two, like two things. And he gets these aerosol cans and he sets them on fire.
Two things is like, it's like hairspray or hair dye or something, which is actually kind of plausible that you might be able to buy just spray hair dye at a random street vendor like that. But all right.
I think I like looked away every time he was doing that because I was like, I don't need to see what Hardison's doing. I know that he will cause a distraction. And then like aerosol cans are on fire and I'm like, what? Okay.
I couldn't track what the first, because he like points to, there's like two things, he's like two and two, and so it's two cans of aerosol and then two of something else, and I don't know what those are. I mean, possibly they're like hot dogs.
He's like, I'm hungry and need to cause a distraction. And so he tosses them past Elliot and Teresa, which covers, gives them cover with smoke, and Parker has stolen a pizza delivery scooter and she rolls up. And Elliot's like, all right, you trust me now that I've gotten you not shot. So jump on the scooter and go, go, go. And of course, this means Elliot has to go after the sniper and he runs up and the sniper has stored his gun in a golf bag, which is, you know, nice cover. And he sees Elliot on the landing coming up to get him and he just chucks the whole golf bag down the flight of stairs at him. But like, don't throw things at Elliot because he will make them into a weapon. Pulls out a golf club and like beats the crap out of him with it.
Well, he pulls out the golf club and then looks at it and gives it like a moment of consideration. Like, oh, this will do. Yeah. All right.
And then we cut to Parker later sitting with police sirens in the distance, sitting with Teresa, checking on her. And then, you know, Hardison shows up and we all know sirens are not where they want to be, so they're ready to go. And Elliot won't let them leave. Parker says, no, cops bad, thieves go.
Yeah. She's like, there's too many cops. Too many cops.
I am uncomfortable with this. But Elliot says, no, wait. Teresa, tell them what you do for a living. And Teresa's like, okay, I'm an administrator. And turns out she works for the 911 emergency system for DC. She, in fact, runs it. So this wasn't just a hit on her. This was terrorism. And Elliot calls his friend, Colonel Vance. Colonel Vance? General Vance?
Colonel Vance.
Colonel Vance.
Who is Adam Baldwin?
Baldwin. And he's like, ain't that a kick in the head? And he shows up and there's cops and FBI agents all over the place looking for evidence.
And to be clear, we have seen him before, because not even before this episode. He was in the first episode of season five as a quick little cameo, which I think they filmed that before they even knew what he was going to come back for. They just wanted to like seed him for a later episode whenever they could get to him.
Yeah. Just the like, what did you do on your summer vacation? Oh, I stopped a nuclear bomb, you know, with my old friend. Yeah. So they're, you know, they're asking like, who is this Vance dude? And he tells them that they were in the service together. They got their hands dirty. So, you know, that they like murdered people together. But after a while they put him in a suit and he asked Elliot to continue working for his country. So he did for a little bit. And Hardison wants to know what kind of work. And he's like, I told you, we got our hands dirty.
He's like, why am I, are you kidding me? I just told you.
Yeah. And you know, I don't talk about this stuff. He's like, we go way back. We're cool. We're going to hand this off. And then we're on the first flight out. Don't worry. So Vance comes up and he, you know, he's just like, all right. So someone paid money to whack this emergency service administrator, I dropped the gunman, here we go, goodbye.
And Vance just stares at them.
Yeah, and he's like, and the file, he's like handing him the stuff. then all of we notice the police and the FBI are surrounding them, and Ellie's like, so.
And yeah, Parker's like, too many cops. I told you so.
Yeah, because they're under arrest. And they do this, they all like back up to each other. So they're like a little triangle facing out.
And it's a nice inversion of the shot that we used to get a lot of, like the overhead shot of the five of them coming together and then breaking apart and all walking a different direction. And now it's like, they turn the other way and back up into each other.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And it's like in a, I don't know, if you're like on Tumblr and you look at leverage, like it's a gif that comes up a lot. But I love it. So yeah, apparently the charges against them are conspiracy to commit murder, multiple counts, assault, battery, racketeering, kidnapping. And they're like being loaded into this van. And Vance tells one of the agents to like go sit up front, and he gets in the back with them, and the agent closes the door, and as they pull away, the congressman steps out from beside the van and watches it pull away. But because I have old white man face blindness, apparently I thought it was a Riley. I was like, why is Riley there? Why isn't he in his shadowy lair?
That's very funny. My reaction to it was like, why is the congressman just like following this colonel around? Like, it,
yeah,
I don't know. I think that they had to cut some stuff with the congressman, but I feel like they either cut too much or not enough.
Yeah, because I legit thought that was Riley, like, oh well, you didn't do the job I wanted, but at least you're going to jail.
It would have been better, actually, if the congressman had stepped out and then, like, Riley had stepped out from another shadowy corner.
And then they, like, pointed at each other, like the Spider-Man meme, because
yeah.
They were
hey! Yeah, that would have been great.
Inside the van, Hardison is arguing that this is a violation of his constitutional rights, and Vance, like, knows exactly who he is and how he cracked the Pentagon servers when he was 12, and the NSA has a file on him a mile long. And Hardison is like touched. He's like, oh, what do they say about me? I hope they gave me a cool nickname.
I was really hoping that that would come back when they actually get, because later they get access to the NSA's servers and databases. I was really hoping that like there would be a throwaway line about like Hardison finding out that he doesn't have a nickname, or he does, yeah, or like they spell his name wrong or something. I wanted their, like, they're calling me Alex.
That'd be funny. But I think at that point, things had already gotten really serious.
Well, right? No, I mean, because it's like right after this that they get the van. I wanted that to be like the first thing he checks, like as they're getting started.
Yeah. That's a shame. Yeah.
I wanted there to be that throwaway joke, or even if he didn't say it, if you just saw him pulling up the file and like nodding at like, yeah.
Or like he's supposed to be looking up something else and are he searching, and Elliot's like, what are you looking for? And he's like,
yeah,
not myself. I wasn't looking my, no.
That'd be lame. Who would look at themselves?
Yeah. It's fine. Yeah. I know what I've done. Then Vance tries to turn to Parker and like do the same thing for her, but she's asleep because she bores easily, which they did mostly. Well, one, because it's hilarious that she's like, doesn't feel threatened or freaked out or whatever. She just immediately falls asleep. But also they didn't want to have to track four people in a small space. So that way, like,
oh, that works.
It wasn't four people having like coverage for four people, so that she didn't have to talk.
I just thought it was a really great power move from her.
Oh, that too.
To yeah. Like fake being asleep to hear what they're saying. And
like, yeah. Well, that's also, boss. Yeah. Cause I think a lot of times if you're like, oh, we're making a tough female character, like she's going to like talk smack or whatever and like not act scared. But Parker's so relaxed.
Yeah.
She's so unafraid that she's like, yeah, I could take a nap.
Also just pretending to be asleep is a good move sometimes.
So Vance actually doesn't really want to arrest them. He wants to tell them what's up. So apparently the 911 administrator wasn't the only hit today. The head of the largest hospital in DC was killed in a suspicious car accident. And the local FEMA director was knifed to death in a mugging, which is probably not a coincidence. And Elliot's like, yeah, not a coincidence. It's what you do if you want to cripple the infrastructure of a city the day of a terrorist attack. So something big is going to hit DC today. And Vance is like, I don't have time for this. Like, it would take me 2 days just to schedule a meeting between the FBI and Homeland Security and everyone else who owns a piece of this. So Elliot's like, all right, so put together one of your little dance teams, which are, Vance tells him now, illegal. But he's like, but if certain known felons somehow resolve the situation, I'm pretty sure I could get all of the charges dropped against them. And Elliot says, I stopped working for you a long time ago. But Vance reminds him that he took an oath to do this, to, you know, save his country. But Hardison, like, there are several times in this episode where Hardison's like, this is above our pay grade. Like, this is not what we do. And he's like, you know, you're talking about stopping a terrorist attack. We need all your intel.
Like, you want us to do this in an afternoon. That's not. No, we need everything.
I don't have Lucille. I don't have any of my setup. And Vance tells him that the truck back at the crime scene is an NSA mobile response intelligence unit. And Hardison gets giddy.
It lights up.
Photography. It's got a JDAM satellite uplink. And he's like, which I don't know anything about because that would be treason.
But are you for real? You have that?
Yeah. And so Vance is like, so you grab the truck. And he's like, hell, your girlfriend's already out of her cuffs. And Parker's like, yeah. She tosses it to him. And he tells Elliot to make it look good. And he punches him, but he has to punch him 3 times to knock him out.
That's a very good, like, scale of toughness. Because, like, there are the people for whom, like, Elliot goes to punch them and they, like, don't even get to one punch before they have done whatever it is that needs to happen. But, and I feel like we've seen people take 2 punches from Elliot before.
Very rarely.
But I don't know that I feel like 3 might be the top level. Who's the blonde guy that he fights sometimes? Is that Quinn?
Quinn.
I feel like Quinn has gotten hit several.
Yeah,
Quinn
they're
might be the only one we've ever seen beat Elliot also, right?
Yes.
3 hits is a lot of hits to go to go down. And Hardison is very impressed that it takes 3 hits.
Yeah. So yeah, he's like, damn. And Elliot says he didn't always wear a suit. So they get back. So like he's like, Parker, get the door. So I guess they've jumped out of this moving van. And they've managed to get back to Greer Park. And they have to get into the other van, the intelligence unit. So Hardison puts on like the only disguise of the episode, a pair of glasses. And he and Elliot approach the truck, and Hardison is just really cute. Acting like he's the tech guy, and
Hardison does an impression of what he thinks other people think nerds are.
Oh, cheese biscuits.
Jason Rice.
What? Jiminy Clicks.
He says something about pinkies too. Like, don't lose your pinkies over it or something like that. I don't know.
I'm not pulling your pinkies here, guy.
There it is. Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's just saying we're destroying these gigabytes of classified data because of how close this is to a transformer. And Elliot's playing his handler. And he's like, look at my badge. Like, take my badge if you don't believe me. And he's like,
what do you think? We're terrorists who are just, or like, you think we're just coming in here to steal this truck?
The agent's like, yes. That's what I think. So then they get in. Parker has gotten into the front of the truck and is, you know, getting them out of there before they realize they've escaped. And Hardison's psyched because it has every single database. We're talking JSTOR. We're talking Academic Search Premier. We're talking the big stuff. No, NSA, CIA,
FBI. Good ProQuest. The, like, yeah. Expensive ProQuests.
Oh, yeah. You're going to have all those primary sources.
Oh, and, like, Science Direct, but flat rate searching. Like, you don't have to pay by the article. Guys, this is really good librarian humor. You don't even understand how funny these jokes are.
So yeah,
as many pages of Pacer as you want to see. Doesn't even matter how high that bill is.
We're going to have to change the rating on this episode. so yeah, Hardison's just as excited about all of this as we are about our databases. Except that, you know, if it wasn't such a gross violation of our civil liberties, he'd be in love right now. So, you know, Parker asks, where do we get start? And Elliot's like, we start with the two of you getting on a plane and getting out of here. Like, you didn't sign up for this. I don't want you to have to be a part of it. And Hardison's like, what are you going to do? How are you going to handle this? You know, he's like, she's a lady. She needs the right touch. What are you going to do with her, with your big punching hand? Puncher screams no.
Well, and Elliot doesn't really like put up a fight. He's just like, yeah. Okay, well then.
Well, yeah, because, you know, Hardison's comeback is funny, but Parker points out, like, we agreed we all change, better or worse, we change together. Like, we're a unit, like, you don't split us up. And yeah, he does, like, he just, like, waits a beat and he's like, okay, what do they got on the gunman? And they, you know, hit the ground running. So Hardison's like, they're running his prints, but it's going to take hours to narrow it down. And Elliot's like, no, 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 I'm going to profile this bitch. So it's the Navy SEAL database from 90 to 95 for him, his enlistment, because he has a very distinctive watch.
I was so happy. It's been a while since we've had a very distinctive anything.
Right? You had to bring it up last time because they didn't say it.
Yeah.
And, you know, then, bam, Hardison's found him. His name's Charlie Scalzi. Dishonorable discharge, and he's got the government has everything on him, and Hardison's like, man, this is disturbing. I mean, it's hot, but it's disturbing.
I did think it was funny that, or not funny, but noteworthy, that the last time they did a split episode like this with the girls' night out and the boys' night out job, they had a lot of scenes that interconnected between the two of them, and then with this one, you don't get any interconnectedness. Yeah. And I thought it was interesting that they don't even mention Nate and Sophie, because this is where it seems like it would have been the place to do it. To say, like, where do we start? Should we call Nate? Right. Or, like, I don't know why you would mention Sophie at that point, but it seems like if they were going to be mentioned, this is the scene to do it in. And I don't think they mention any of the three of them in the frame-up job.
There is a reference at the beginning. Nate has just gotten off. Sophie had talked to them off camera on the phone, and they said that they were going to stay in DC a little while longer. And that's it. Like, that's okay. Really the time that they're referenced.
It just seems weird. And maybe they cut a reference, but it seems weird that they wouldn't at least mention tapping Nate in on it, or like, should we let Nate know what's going on, or should we have Sophie FedEx us our other passports? Like,
there's no time for that. Yeah. But yeah, I wonder, the episode before this is the Broken Wing job, and it's, there's a lot of Parker kind of realizing that she can do this on her own. You know, she calls and asks, like, tries to get help, and in the end has to do everything by herself. So I don't know if, like, there's something in that. I don't know.
I mean, I don't think there's anything bad about it. I don't think you have to have them be interconnected just for their own sake, but it just, I don't know, struck me as a little weird.
Yeah, it's just interesting.
It's the same way I feel about Marvel movies, when I'm like, are you not even going to address why you're not, like Captain America, they're arresting you for treason. Why are you not calling Iron Man?
Yeah.
You know a guy.
Yeah, help you out. Yeah, I don't know. So they check this guy's parking, because apparently now you always check parking first to figure out where he's been. Especially now since all the meters take cards. And they find out that he has been parked on the same block 8 times in a row a couple months ago. And so they need to find out more about that block. And they find out that there's an antique store that had robbers that had hidden in an old sub basement waiting for the weekend. And they even brought a cooler of beer with them, which they left behind when they made off with thousands of dollars worth of jewelry. And Harrison's ready to brush that off. And Parker's like, no, that's it. That's exactly what we're looking for. And she's like, do you know why you bring a cooler full of ice to a robbery? No, I do. And she's like, everything we need to know is in that basement. And I'll drive.
So they don't explain here, though, why the sniper was there hanging out. Like, was he providing security for the lab?
No, I don't know if he was just one of the guys who went in. Yeah, the goons make no sense to me.
It's very vague. I did feel like the fact that it was an antique store, and it's been a while since I've read it, I might be wrong, but that feels like there's a Sherlock Holmes story called The Redheaded League. Yeah. Were you meant to?
Yeah, no, I think when I was watching it, I was like, oh, it's The Adventure of the Redheaded League, but I didn't.
Okay.
Think to make that reference. But yeah, it is very similar.
Because that's, I think, a antique store, right? That they're trying to, like, I think rob. Yeah, but they're trying to, like, go through the basement of it to get to the bank.
Go to the bank next door, yeah.
Yeah. Spoilers for the Sherlock Holmes short story, The Redheaded, which is The Redheaded League. It's a good one.
It is a very good one. You should read it if you haven't already. Let's see. Oh, so Parker's like, I'll drive. And Hardison says, hold on. And Ellie goes, exactly. And he's like, no, hold on. And then they're like, there's no.
Yeah, they sit down on swivelly chairs.
Swivelly chairs that aren't, like, attached to anything.
I mean, that seems like it'd be really fun. Yeah. Real talk, it'd be great fun.
Not with Parker driving, though.
Especially with Parker driving.
I bruise real easy.
Oh.
So then we see Udall, but he's dressed up very offensively as a Middle Eastern man. And he goes into a Washington news office and hands a package to the receptionist to give to the editor. And as he as he walks out of the building, he's taking his disguise off already. Which, dude, there are probably security cameras nearby. What are you doing?
I don't know. They also never really follow up on, like, presumably it's a manifesto about stuff, but, like, it's, I don't know. It's like a weird little plot thread that just establishes that he's kind of racist.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's to be like, all right, this is what's happening, and to throw everybody off his trail.
I mean, I guess what it comes down to is that we don't see that much of his plan. Like, we don't know what his ultimate, all the steps of it, and, like, what he was he trying to, like, hold them for ransom? Was he planning on getting away with it? Like, we don't see all of the perfect steps of it. We only see the parts that they need to know to stop him.
Yeah, like you would in an action movie. Whereas, like, you know, in a regular episode of Leverage, we're going to hear the evil speech of evil between him and a henchman. And
yeah.
And here they have to piece it all together.
But themselves. They're not worried about getting the whole, like, soup to nuts view of it. They're just interested in stopping him.
Yeah. But I think we do find out kind of why he's doing this.
Oh yeah, why? But I'm saying, though, like, we don't find out what's exactly what he dropped off at the time. So we don't find out, like, what he was planning on doing after he released the virus, and like how he hired all these hench people, or you know,
nuts and bolts of it. That's true. But Parker figures out pretty easily that one of the walls in the sub basement has been freshly painted, because there are bubbles when she like pulls out her wall torch from earlier. Her little creme brulee torch from the vault, and then she uses it here. So remember, she has this on a person, but she's like, she's got a torch and she's got a taser in her.
And she has a little, like a little sticky suction cup thing that she uses when she cuts the glass later.
Oh, and she has her lock picks too.
Yeah.
But
yeah, and she's like a little tiny pack.
Little tiny fanny pack. But she's like, you bring ice to a heist to keep the saw blade cool, an industrial saw. The beer and the jewels were a distraction. So then she like uses a fire extinguisher to break through this like fresh sheetrock, I guess. And she was not supposed to drop the fire extinguisher through, but like Christian told her how to hold it or something. And then the second time she just dropped it accidentally.
That's funny. It works really well.
Yeah. And they like peer through the hole, and then they go through, and it's this really creepy abandoned science lab with like beakers and like creepy specimens and jars of formaldehyde or whatever. And they see that it was the Coldwater Health Sciences Foundation, like a lab, which was the precursor to the CDC. And here's when we're going to get like a little too real life, people. So we've kind of mentioned it already, but be forewarned. I mean, maybe I should put a trigger warning in.
I mean, right as here. You may have heard, within the last year or so, there's been an outbreak in the world of a kind of like a flu strain. Yeah. You may have heard of people getting sick.
Yeah.
Might have heard, seen some news stories about it.
Maybe you've been affected. Like, who knows? If it's changed the way you live your life day to day.
Maybe everyone who listens to this podcast is in New Zealand right now and just like, I don't know what you're talking about.
I wish we were all in New Zealand with you. So far as I know, we don't have any New Zealand listeners, but I'd love them if they decided to start now. But yeah, so this is I think mostly this is just like wishful thinking. Like, I wish this had happened and everything had happened now, this episode happened, but it didn't. So yeah, so this was,
Look, it's not the Spanish flu that's going around. So at least there's that.
Yeah. But yeah, so apparently this lab was forgotten, and Parker asks like, how do you lose track of a whole laboratory? And then Hardison and Elliot drop some like more terrifying knowledge trivia bits. There's over 200 tons of uranium missing from the United States nuclear storage. The Air Force lost a hydrogen bomb off the coast of Georgia. And Elliot says, countries are big things, Parker, a lot of secrets slip through the cracks. And
which is true.
Yeah, I think this scene is really cool. Like, they were kind of creeped out when they were in it, and this was also hilarious. Al just said he could not stop sneezing because his allergies were bad because of the dust, which is hilarious. Yeah. Hardison is always complaining about dust and it messing up his allergies.
The scene would have lost some gravitas though if he had been like,
if Hardison
talking been through his stuffy nose.
Yeah, but it's cool because it's entirely lit by their flashlights. Like, they don't have any other lights in there. Like, they did it all.
Yeah.
And it looks beautiful because of those fancy cameras they had. So Parker says, you know, you should see this case, and it's vacuum sealed. And Hardison's like, do not tell me what's inside. And Parker says, influenza 1918. And Hardison's like, get out now. And so they like run out of this room, and they're up on the surface by the truck, and Hardison is freaking out. Like, he is like panic attack, freaking out. You know, the Spanish flu killed 50 million during World War One, and now somebody's got it. He's like, and Parker's just like, okay, we're just going to do this like any other job. And Hardison's like, no, we cannot. This is not just any other job. But Elliot's like, just, all right, just stay focused. And like, yeah, Hardison just can't. He's like, 50 million people, 50 million. And that was when the population was lower. He's like, now it would be 150 million, 150 million dead. And, you know, we're just thieves. That's what we're good at. But this is way out of our league. And Elliot asks him, are you scared? And he's like, you're damn right. So he like tries to leave, but Elliot grabs his wrist and stops him. And then like, there's from here on out, like there's no like, damn it, Hardison's at all. There's no moments of like levity. It's all like very serious. But he grabs the back of his like neck or his head, and he like pulls him really close and tells him that he's like the best thief and the smartest guy he knows. Which in the commentary, it got real deep when they were talking about this scene, because that's like what John Rogers' brother would say to him, that he was the smartest guy he knew. And apparently his brother,
I think it was like his best friend. I don't think it was his brother. I thought it was someone who was like a brother to him.
He said, I heard him say brother in the commentary, maybe I misheard, but yeah.
I thought that was from what he says on his blog, it's that I thought it was that it was like a friend of his was like a brother, and that's why he wrote this that way, because that's the same sort of thing that's happened with these characters.
Yeah, okay.
That like they're brothers now, even though,
okay. And then he's like, and that guy had like died.
Yeah,
is that there too? Yeah, okay. But yeah, so a friend, a brother, and he said like while we were shooting this, like he told them like, yeah, this is what my brother or my friend would have said. And he's like, they were all like real serious. And then the rest of the crew was like, whoa. But yeah, Elliot's like, you're the smartest man I've ever known, Hardison, and I need that brain to get me to him. Cause you know, if I lay my hands on him, it's done. So Hardison's like, okay, he's got a weapon.
Ironically, it's not really what happens later in the episode, that if Elliot gets his hands on him, it's done. That's eventually what happens, but not the first time out.
That's true. Yeah. But yeah, so Hardison says he has to weaponize it. And so Parker's like, okay, we got to find a lab. And Hardison says, no, he doesn't need a lab. He needs pigs. And then we get they're back on the truck, and we get some more history on H1N1, which is like the avian flu, we know. And that started on large industrial farms in China, where people worked in close proximity to chickens and pigs. And then it traveled, just like another illness that we know, from animals to humans. So he needs to have total access to a pig farm, and they call up the NSA satellites. Also, he does it like verbally, very Alexa. Call up the NSA satellites. Calling up NSA satellite.
It's like, thanks, creepy. Which that is something though, that like when this episode aired, that was super high tech. And now with Alexa, like that's not. I don't have Alexa because they freak me out. But I also feel like I've now said that so many times that if anyone is listening to this out loud, probably someone has had their device like go off.
Right. Yeah. Like, it's just normal.
Alexa,
now.
Play Brothers in Arms. But yeah, that's not weird anymore. It wouldn't weird me out if I was inside a van and it started talking back to me.
So they find, thanks to the creepy spy truck, a farm an hour outside the city that, according to the records, the owner shut down 3 weeks ago. So Elliot calls Vance and tells him, I'm sending you an address. And Vance is like, you had to use my badge to jack that truck, didn't you?
He's at the like Washington Post office.
Yes. You can see everybody freaking out behind him. And he's like, you know, it seems like your bad guy found some old disease research and he's making it hot. And Vance says, you know, we know his name. It's Ahmed. And he just dropped off a manifesto and it's serious crazy. And Elliot tells him that they've got a lead on what may be a weapons lab. But Vance is like, yeah, call me when it stops being a maybe. Like, it's going to stop being a maybe really soon. Aww. So they show up at this farm, which is such a shame because this is a darling farm. It's so pretty. Yeah. So they're like, okay, we got to look for any remnants of a lab. And they're looking over. They find some stuff in the barn. And Parker walks a little further into the barn and around the tractor. She, you know, Elliot's going to secure the area, but she sees something and it's the farmer who, like, I'm guessing he's Farmer Casey because it's Casey Farm, but like never gets a name. And he's dead.
There is a dead body on Leverage, which, as we talked about last time I was on, are pretty rare.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably in one hand we could count them.
Let's not. That sounds gross and depressing.
No, I said probably. We're not going to do it. I don't have time for that. And you know my memory at this point is shot.
Too sleepy for it.
So, you know, Parker asks, like, you know, was it the flu? And Hardison's like, they could have just killed him to be quiet. Like, there's no proof that they weaponized it.
And Elliot, such what you're thinking.
And we see the proof because it's just this devastating, like, yard of dead pigs, as far as the eye can see. And they've got, some, like,
were apparently made of cardboard, though.
Oh, so they said in the commentary that some of them were, there were a couple who were dead, like, mm-hmm. already.
From, like, a slaughterhouse.
Yeah, and then everything else was, like, CGI. And they put, like, the fly buzzing audio over it, and it's just chilling. Also, filming this episode made John Rogers, like, stop eating pork.
Yeah, because
I saw pig play fetch, and I was like, oh, yeah, I can't eat that ever again. I'm sorry.
Fair.
Totally fair. Vance comes out to meet them there, and he's like, well, that's not a maybe anymore. But why'd they kill the guy? And Hardison says it's their patient zero. Like, once they got it to work on the pigs, they needed a human host for the final stage. And Parker has found some papers inside that were the lease agreement. And Vance is like, yeah, but it'll be a shell company. But Hardison's already found it.
Hardison's like, yeah, there's six of them.
Yeah, but I got another lease from them. And it's a trailer on some undeveloped land. So Elliot's like, we'll meet you there. And Vance is like, nope. This line is so good. There's a time for sneaking around, my brother. And there's a time for dropping an attack chopper full of pissed off 19-year-olds in full body armor on somebody. And we have reached that appointed hour. But then they don't actually do that. It's like FBI agents in like suits.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part. But that turns out to be for the best.
It's still a very good line. It's actually a line that feels in line with like his character on Chuck.
Yes.
Which it is kind of a shame that they didn't just have him playing John Casey.
Oh my god.
Right. And I get it because like it's John Casey is an NSA agent, right? He's NSA, I think. And Sarah's CIA.
Yeah.
And he's not that high up.
Yeah. But oh my god, that would have been
but
such
it's- too bad because I love the idea of them existing in the same universe.
And
since we've decided that canonically they should have also existed in the same world with Psych,
exactly.
And then you have Psych and Chuck existing in the same world. It's just great.
And they're not that far from each other in California.
Yeah.
All right. And if we
like,
ever
here, we have great, you could have a great standoff between Chuck and Sean, as they both realize everything about each other and just have to be like, so I'm going to buy this HDMI cable and I'm not going to buy the warranty. Like, mutually assured destruction.
Exactly. Oh, I want to watch Chuck now. Okay.
Hey, it holds up.
I mean, I believe you. Okay, so Vance goes to call in his anti-terrorism strike force, and he uses the smart screen on his Suburban or whatever car he has, and like keep that in mind in a little bit.
Yeah, not just gratuitous product placement, actually.
It's been a while since they did gratuitous. There was like one in the second season, I think, that was like, okay, they're driving a Yaris, not a Yaris, that's psych, but like they were driving like a specific car.
It's, yeah.
But they haven't done it since then. So, you know, there's a class 4 biohazard he's calling in, and Hardison says, you've got to burn it. Fire is the only way to get rid of this thing, to kill it. And, you know, so he's like, okay, I need a burn unit and tactical. And then Vance says, leave the truck somewhere we can find it. Your passports will be cleared by the time you reach Dulles. Call you when it's done.
And so that might be a throwaway line. I like the idea, though, that the passport thing is just that, like, he assumes they're going to leave the country. Like, he might not know. He doesn't know they're, like, holed up in Portland.
That's true. And they're back inside the truck, and they're kind of sitting there, and they're not excited. They don't feel satisfied. And, you know, Hardison's like, we won. We should be happy. So why aren't we? And Elliot's like, the biggest hospital. He's like, look at the victims. You've got the 911 administrator. Okay. You've got the emergency services. Fine. But just one hospital administrator? And Harrison's like, well, yeah, you said it would drive. That's what you would do to drive a city crazy the day of an attack. He's like, that's the right way to do it. But you hit all the hospitals. Why just this one guy? And Parker realizes, oh, there's a link between those three people specifically.
So they all kind of do. All three of them are like, oh, they're all connected. Yeah, okay.
There's a link. So Hardison goes in to check their work histories, and they don't have a crossover. But in their financials, he sees that they were all in Berlin 2 years ago at the same hotel. And they all took the same flight out of Berlin. And in the same flight back, because they went to a symposium on bioterror at the Berlin University School of Public Health. And it was led by another DC guy, Dr. Everett Udall, who laid out a bunch of different scenarios for terror attacks on DC. And Parker says, he's probably dead too. but Elliot's like, okay, but if he is, his research could help us or give us a target. And look at that. There's a home address. Let's go.
How convenient.
Well, yes. Probably had his favorite type of ice cream on there too. Then we see outside of this. It says outside Palmyra, Virginia.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah. Okay. If you're from that area, I apologize if I said it wrong. And we see them like approaching this kind of like rundown trailer when the congressman Riley,
it's that white guy
shows up, and we know it's the congressman because Vance calls him congressman, and he's like, you shouldn't be here. He's like, really, as head of the oversight committee, I can supervise any operation I like,
because that's what you want your elected officials doing, is just following around random military.
Oh yeah. I mean, I want them to make sure that they've got warrants.
Yeah.
And he's like, do you have your warrant? He's like, it's on its way. And then he's like, okay, we'll wait. And Vance turns around. He's like, give me a warrant.
Which, like, I get that it's terrorism and all that they're after, but I did think that that was a nice way of like, oh, maybe the congressman isn't all bad.
Yeah.
He might have a point. Cause it sometimes in procedurals, they do present the idea of having to get a warrant as like this ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh,
like this is keeping us from. Yeah, but they didn't play it that way. Like they played it like the congressman was right and Vance knew he was right.
And it ends up saving his life in a minute.
Yeah.
So.
Terrorism or no, I think that's still whatever fruit of the poisonous tree if. Or it would have been, so.
Yeah. So back in DC, they find Udall's residence and they knock and nobody answers. So Hardison's like, I'm really not looking forward to finding another body. So Elliot like is like, all right, Parker, do your work. So she picks the lock and opens it up. And Hardison's gonna be the first at the door because he needs to get to the computer. And he takes one step and they hear like click right as he like steps down and Elliot grabs the back of his coat to stop him from moving anymore. And Harrison's like, Elliot? And Elliot like kneels down, like he like crouches behind him, still holding on to him. And he's like, did you hear a click? Like wooden floors don't click. And we see that there's a claymore wired to something just right. That's right under Hardison's feet. It's a pressure plate, by the way. And Elliot's like creative. And Parker just is like, okay, pull him back. But if he pulls him back, the explosion velocity of a claymore is 4,000 feet per second and we're not that fast. So everyone's kind of freaking out. And Elliot's like, the whole area in front of the floor could be rigged. But Parker's like, oh, I got a plan. And she climbs on Elliot's arm, Hardison's back.
Her plan is the sexiest scene that Leverage has ever done.
It really is.
I mean, Leverage is not on the whole a particularly sexy show. That's not what it's interested in.
Yeah.
But this scene, you're like, oh, I get it. Like, oh, right.
Yeah.
Like, it's great.
Very great. There was a sort of towards the beginning, maybe about a year ago, there was like a whole kind of meme going around on Instagram and TikTok of like, I watch a lot of hockey social media, but it was like, you know, professional hockey players, so like very fit guys, and they're like very tiny wives and girlfriends. So, but it's like these big buff hockey players and they're just like standing there and they're like little yoga instructor wives or girlfriends are like, start on their backs and then like work their way. So it's like literally what Parker is doing here.
Okay.
So like show off how like limber and strong they both are.
All right.
Like, yeah, we get it. We get it.
I mean,
we can imagine a lot of things about you now. We get it. But yes, no, Parker and Hardison did it first. So yeah, she climbs over on his back, under his arm, and then is like has a
she like baby Bjorns around his chest
and then does like a back bend. Meanwhile Elliot is holding onto Hardison like as a counterweight.
Yeah.
And in the commentary he's like, you can't see, but like look, I'm busting a vein in my neck trying to hold on to him. And she like flips over backwards and detaches the wires from the claymore.
This was actually Beth.
Yeah. Yes. First, he asks if she wants a kiss for luck, and she says, "Who needs luck?"
Yeah.
There's our second. But yes, it is all three of them actually doing it. They were going to have a stuntee do it, and they didn't call cut fast enough, and she was like, "All right, let's go."
Well, and it really does make the scene better, and they have good stunt doubles on the show, both in terms of like the stunt doubles look like the characters and act like the characters very well, but it would definitely lose something if that was not actually Beth Reed's craft doing that.
Like the close-ups wouldn't have been as good.
Yeah.
So she disarms that, and they go to check on the computers. and Hardison's on the computer. Parker and Elliot are searching his stuff. And so now they're like, okay, he's probably not dead. Something else is going on here. If he's got a bomb wired to the front of his house. Elliot finds a letter of suspension from the CDC Biowarfare Research Department for erratic behavior, which is a great sign. And Hardison has an email from the CDC saying your repeated warnings of a biological attack on the US have crossed the line into hysteria. Colleagues are claiming harassment. He also has like all of his research. There's a device, to like release this is a briefcase with a two-part detonator. The virus is mixed in with a gas and the bomb detonates and spreads the infection. It's like a germ dirty bomb. And then you can see it all like clicking in Hardison's head. He's like, wait, his research is here. His experiments are at the pig farm. His research is here. And then Elliot's like, oh no. And Parker goes, so what's the trailer for? And how, like, it's wild that this man thought that far ahead to be like, well, I'm gonna plant a fake place for them to go.
Yeah, again, I just feel like we don't see all the steps of his plan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't know what these three people did to cause him to like go after them.
Yeah.
Specifically, and like, yeah, like, was that trailer trap meant for someone in particular, or was it just like a backup?
Right? Like, he was already gonna have those people killed. And those aren't the colleagues who were claiming harassment on him because they didn't work for the CDC. So I don't know.
I mean, I guess it's possible that that trailer trap would have gone in somehow with like whatever the manifesto he dropped off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, maybe he thought that that would lead them to the trailer. Like, maybe the crew was finding things in the wrong order.
Hmm. Hmm. Yeah, because they had just found the manifesto, so maybe there was, if they had looked into it more.
Like, yeah, maybe that was a way to take out, like, whatever the top detectives were coming after him to try to, like, sow more terror.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing that happens in terrorist attacks, right? It's, like, to try to take out the first responders, to make people afraid to help.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so evil.
Yeah, so we've realized that...
You know what, I'm gonna... You're frozen now. Your voice is fine, but otherwise you're frozen. Why don't we stop our videos and see if that helps?
Okay.
Okay, right. We'll see if that makes it better.
Does that sound any better?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah, so we're back in the field where the trailer is, and I guess Vance has gotten his warrant because they're approaching the trailer. And he's left his phone in his car, and it starts ringing because Elliot's calling. And the congressman answers the call, and he just says, hello.
Because who just answers other people's phones like that? Like, that could have just been his wife being like, are you going to be home for dinner or what?
Yeah. And Elliot's like, just give me Vance. And the congressman's gets really miffy about it. He's like, who is this? Who is this? Give me Vance. This is a secure line. And he's like, yeah, I know. I know exactly who I'm calling. And he's like, this is an emergency. I need to speak with. And then the congressman hangs up on him and throws.
There are so many other things that someone could have been called. Like, he is a colonel.
Yeah. In the middle of, you know, like a dangerous mission. Like, it could be relevant, maybe.
Yeah.
So they can't get a hold of him. They've got to figure out how they're going to contact him. And Hardison's like, is he near his car? Because I can hack his car. So, you know, we know that he was using his Bluetooth with the car earlier. And if the car's off, like, Parker thinks it's not going to work, but Hardison's like, there's always a little power. And that's why, you know, that's how electric locks work. So he hacks into the electrical system of the car and the testing protocols, and he uses Morse code to honk SOS.
Which Vance gets like immediately. He's like, what? My car signaling Morse code? The hacker.
Right?
Everybody go.
It's not just Vance. It's the agent standing next to him. He's like, yeah. Your car is signaling SOS. But yeah, he does connect those dots really fast that it's the hacker. And thank God, because he starts running and the trailer explodes.
It's a really good explosion.
Because they actually blew up that trailer. I think that's partially why they had this scene, because, you know, it doesn't make, as we were saying earlier, like 100% sense to you if you think about it a lot. But because they couldn't blow anything up in DC, they can't, you know, but they could blow up a whole trailer. That's easy to get a hold of.
That's true.
And they were, and they had like some cool shots. Like they have a camera in the glasses of one of the extras. And so you get that like shaky cam as they're running away from the explosion. And so it feels very real. And Christian Kane was like, this is the coolest thing. It's like playing Call of Duty.
Great. Sure. That's not scary.
Yeah. Back at the Udall residence, Parker opens their fridge and finds like so many eggs. And they all have stuff written on them too. But Elliot decides, you know, we've got to go find this guy. It's up to us. And Hardison says, you know, he's smart. He's going to want to release this virus in a public place. And Parker's like, a grocery store? Because he really likes eggs. There's a lot of eggs here. And Hardison doesn't make a connection at all here yet. He's like, weird, but no, I can track his phone. So he's going to want to go somewhere with a lot of people. And we see him moving into like the subway entrance and going downstairs, holding a briefcase as they run up just as he's out of sight. So I don't know where he's been in the meantime, but luckily not down in the subway yet.
Wait, that's a good question. I mean, I guess he had to deliver his manifesto and then give everyone time to like react to it.
And maybe he had to detonate the bomb in the trailer too. I don't know.
Maybe he was waiting for rush hour.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's waiting for rush hour because he needs to be a lot of people.
Because they make a point of saying, oh, he's going to be at the main station, which is also like, not a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, he must have just been waiting for the maximum number of people to be available.
Yeah. No, that's it. That's gotta be it. So Hardison says he's trying to block his phone's GPS, but there's enough Wi-Fi around. And I'm like, whoo, that's terrifying. And they see that he's going into the subway. And they run down and they can't find him. And so they have to like run onto the other side of the platform. And they can't tell where he is. And, you know, they're trying to track him, but Hardison's like, I've got 100 feet of concrete and live wires. Like, give me a second. But the train is leaving. And Hardison's like, okay, the signal's moving. And, you know, he's on the train, which is gone. And Parker's like, so am I. And they turn around and, yep, but she's not behind us anymore. And Elliot's like, okay, when you pick him out of a crowd, call us. But then we see that she's on the train, like on top of the train. And she's like, never mind. So they...
Very, like, end of speed.
Yes. This... So yeah, we talked about this subway station earlier. It's the only underground train station in Portland. And it's like the deepest one in like the world. It's very, very far underground.
That's weird. I did not, don't like that.
Yeah, I don't know why. So Parker or Elliot and Hardison run back upstairs and they head toward a hotel where a guy like pulls up and like says,
that's hey, the what? Hotel Manderley.
Oh, that is. Oh. But the businessman goes to like toss his keys to the valet and they do like a good, like a quick, like 1-2. Hardison catches them and then tosses them to Elliot and they jump into this guy's sports car and like peel out. But the cops get called right away. Don't worry. And yeah. They're like, you know, in the car, they're not going to sing. Just two good old boys behind the wheel because they're not in Lucille. But
also, it's not that kind of episode.
Not the tone of the episode. So
they could have hummed it a little.
Later, when they were recounting it, they said that they sang it when they were, you know, just upping how cool they were. But yeah, so they're, Hardison says the next stop is the main stations where four lines intersect. And Hardison or Elliot decides that's probably where he's going to release the virus in the main terminal. And if he pops it there, then the infected people will spread it to the national monuments, the airport, 2.5 states. And then they see a police motorcycle behind them. So now they're in a police chase. And Elliot yells to Parker to stop the train. And she's still like making her way down the train so she can get in. And like it's knocked back, looks kind of painful to be on a speeding train and get hit.
I feel like they've had, she's kind of been having a day physically.
Mm-hmm.
There's yeah. just been a lot of like stretching and hitting things.
I know, we're gonna have to get her a massage after this,
hopefully. Yeah, I mean, I just hope that they don't go get directly on a plane. Because I feel like if she has to sit even in first class for, you know, 5 or 6 hours, she's just going to be a mess of knots.
Like, do you think they're going to let Elliot on a plane at this point, at the end of this episode?
I think if he washed his arm, he'd be okay.
What about his leg?
It doesn't, it's as long as he covered up the blood.
Okay, we'll get to that in a second. So Hardison tells her, like, if you can stop the train near it, there's a maintenance corridor that we can access. So that'll be good. And Elliot continues to evade the police. And then Parker has to, like, is hanging onto the side of the train and, like, ducking. Things are jutting out from the wall. And she's just yelling, woohoo. She's very excited. But she stops the train and we see Udall, who's like gone inside and has sat down, push a button on his briefcase. And Elliot and Hardison get to the entrance to the utility tunnel. And Hardison is able to like hack into the lock and then they run in and close the door and then the cops can't follow them in. Which is great. It's like they have like 2 seconds to spare.
Hardison is really good with those locks.
Yes, right? He doesn't have to like, or maybe that's like a sign of how easy these are to break into.
I would like to think that's not true, but yeah.
Yeah. So Parker is looking for Udall, and this is a very crowded train. Because as we theorize, it's probably rush hour. And Hardison's like, okay, he'll have a bag or a briefcase, but everybody
else. So helpful on the DC Metro.
Right? So
he'll be wearing comfortable shoes to make his commute easier.
There we go. But he's also going to be nervous, Elliot said. He's going to be sweaty and twitchy. And Hardison's like, no, no, he won't, the eggs, because that's how you make most vaccines, not our vaccines currently, but you culture them in eggs. So he's vaccinated himself. And so, you know, Elliot's like, he's immune, Parker, he's immune. And she's like, all right, I got it. And so she's like going around, like just touching people on the arms.
Just shoving her way through.
Sorry. And she hits Udall and he's like, ow. And she turns and she's like, step on a nail, tetanus shot, Dr. Udall. And he straight up, like, no hesitation, pulls a gun. And's like, yes, well, you're too late.
Yeah, just give zero fucks. Ooh,
right?
We don't curse on them.
I'm ready to go.
But everyone sees the gun and, like, freaks out.
Mm-hmm. And Elliot pushes a button that opens the doors and people are like, bye, I'm out of here.
Yeah, they just start, like, running down the subway tracks.
Yeah, I mean, Hardison does say, like, everybody off, he's got a bomb. And so they're all, you know, making a run for it. Well, you want to, it's the only way.
I think you want to try and avoid doing that in DC because we have the third rail.
Yes. Okay. I thought that earlier when they were like running on the track. I was like, where's the third rail?
They're on like train tracks. They're not on subway tracks.
Yeah.
Which I mean, also, if that were actually DC, there would be some rats the size of like small house cats.
Oh yeah,
built on a swamp, the rats are a real thing.
When they were filming this, you know, because they're down there actually in the tunnel, they were like, all right, you have 4 hours to film down here and then a large train will come barreling down this track. And they were like, we got done early. We were out of there in enough time.
I feel like at that point, probably like Dean Devlin and John Rogers are like, so how can we always be filming on?
Right? We'll always stick to schedule. It'd be great. So yeah, Udall is just yelling about how he's warned the government for 40 years and Yemen, 9/11, they're still too slow. An apocalypse is going to happen. I'm just waiting for some terrorists with the right equipment to show up or to find what I found. And he's like, some people are going to die, but this is the only way for the government to wake up. So, and he holds up his wrist because he's handcuffed himself to the thing. But when he holds his wrist up, the handcuffs are cuffed to nothing because the briefcase is gone because Parker has it. And Elliot makes a run at him and Parker moves out of the way. And Udall turns and shoots Elliot like through the shoulder, but Elliot grabs him and like disarms him and throws him down. Now, Hardison kicks the gun away, but this is one of the few times you don't see Elliot completely take apart a gun when he disarms somebody.
Yeah.
And that comes back to like bite him in the thigh. I mean,
it bothered me a lot. And then when I rewatched the episode again, it was like, well, the gun is pretty far away and it seems like Hardison has dealt with it.
Yeah.
And he's just been shot.
Yeah.
But I do like that in order to bring Elliot down to like human standards, they have to do things like shoot him or hit him with a roller coaster.
True. True. Also, like, they have, I mean, I know that they're focused on this briefcase and the dirty bomb inside of it, but he has handcuffs. Like, you could have handcuffed this man.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that they all thought someone else was gonna do it or something.
Yeah,
but it guess- also really bothers me that he does not put pressure on that bullet hole.
Yeah, he's just standing there.
Or just because, like, you would know to do that, to put pressure on the wound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but when Hardison is like, damn, man, are you okay? He's just like, disarm the bomb. And Hardison says he would if he could get to it, but the edges of the bomb, of like the detonation area, are there. There's like a glass thing over it and they're wired. So if they break the glass, it's going to go off. And Parker's like, I kept one of the diamonds from earlier. Sorry. And he's like, babe, all is forgiven. So as we all know, diamonds cut glass, and they like cut a little circle, and we see her little suction cup. She opens it up.
Which just appears out of nowhere.
Oh yeah. But at the same time, you're like, yeah, that's fair. Seems like something she would have.
Yeah. In her tiny, tiny pack.
Right. And Udall like sees that they're distracted, and he starts crawling for the gun. And Hardison has managed to take down the bomb, but there's apparently an aerosol failsafe, which will spray the gas full of the virus. And he's like, there's no boom, but there's enough in there to contaminate the air for the next nearest stops. I mean, it gets the city, at least the whole city, everyone in DC.
And which we are against.
Yes, we do not like that. We do not want that. And by this time, Udall's gotten to the gun and he fires at them, and they all have to dive for cover. And this, like, oh, Elliot and Parker like look at each other and they just like, just one nod, and like they know.
It's like a little callback sort of to the great scene between them on the mountain job. That's not what it's called. The long way down job.
Yeah.
Where they talk about like what makes them different than the rest of the crew.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that was them just like acknowledging it again. Like, well, yeah, we do what has to be done. We're those people.
Yeah. Oh God, it's gonna make me cry. And then she turns to Hardison and she says, for luck. And then she kisses him. And then I guess she looks at Elliot again and they nod again. And she grabs the briefcase and like runs off the train while Elliot runs toward Udall. And he does this like a run, jump, like punch down, like Jackie Chan reference.
Yeah. Well, he gets shot in the leg on the way.
On his way, he gets shot in the leg.
And this whole episode, they've been using some slow-mo as Elliot hits people, which can be a little overdone sometimes, but I think it really works here because Christian Kane is the one doing all these stunts. So doing the slow-mo like really lets you see that it is the actor doing them.
Yeah.
But there's definitely slow-mo as he comes in with the punch and then it cuts away, and it's very effective.
And you don't actually see the punch hit, but you like, you know. And they were like, you really did come down on that actor who we haven't talked about at all.
When I was watching this earlier, Max watched the second half of the episode with me, and I pointed out that I feel like Christian Cade would make a really good Wolverine, like a very different Wolverine than Hugh Jackman, to be fair, but like possibly a more comic accurate one. Max contends that he doesn't think he's quite like cool enough to play it off the way that Wolverine actually is. But I'm just like, he's kind of tiny, but also like very burly.
Yeah.
And the like jump up and punch down. Like I could see that with just claws coming out.
Ooh,
as he did that, right?
That would be really cool.
And he's kind of got the hair for it.
Yeah.
I assume he could
pull off the like mutton chops.
Yeah.
Yeah, those in the DB Cooper job, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Christian Kane for Wolverine.
There we go. Okay, let's go back to this very dramatic part of this episode.
Yes, sorry, of course. Yes. Big punchy.
Yes.
It has been shot again.
Yes. He punches the big punch. And Hardison goes running after Parker. And he's like, don't do it. And like, you think, and she's like knelt down in the corridor with the bomb. And she's like kind of kneeling over it with her back to Hardison. And he's like yelling, don't do it, don't do it. And she like stands back up and like turns the case on the side and like turns on her blowtorch just as the aerosol goes and like directs the flame right at it and is like burning the aerosol as it's coming out.
It's very pretty.
It is very pretty. And she, you know, normally if Parker was like lighting something on fire, like, you know, she'd have that like glint in her eye, but she does not here, obviously. And she turns around and she's like, fire's the only thing that'll kill this thing, right? And Hardison's like, yeah, that'll do it. And he like hugs her and tells her not to do that again.
It's so sweet.
And then we have Vance talking to Elliot, like, you know, just wrapping things up for us as Elliot's being tended to by an EMS guy at an ambulance.
Just basically getting totally mummified in bandages.
Yes.
And with just, like, a lot of blood.
Yeah. And it, okay, this is so gross, but that blood looks really realistic.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like, well, you know, somebody's like wiped it and you're like, oh yeah, like that's part that didn't get wiped up. And it like, it looks.
Well, when he like walks away, there's like blood dripping down his arm or like streaks of it.
It's so gross. And he's annoyed. He's like, just leave me alone. Like, get away from me. But Vance is trying to convince him that he needs to come back to work for him, because by the time the bureaucrats wake up, it'll be too late. And Elliot's like, yeah, I just met a guy who had that same argument. So maybe not the best tack. And Elliot's like, he did what he thought he had to do. But I'll tell you something, Vance. I know firsthand, you become obsessed with being your enemy. It's really easy to become him. So, and then we see an officer leading Udall away. But Vance is still like, yeah, but, you know, just promise you'll at least consider working with us again. And Elliot, this is a fun, like, twist on what they normally say. You know, he says, I work with them now. And Vance asks, honor among thieves? And he says something like that. But Vance is like, the world could always use some more good guys. And Parker says, well, too bad, we're the bad guys.
Yeah. No, I think Elliot says that.
Oh. I think he does, but in the transcript that I'm reading, it says Parker says it. But I think it is Elliot. I think you're right.
Oh. Because, and then he like drops the crutch and just like leans yes. on Hardison.
And then yeah, and Parker's like, you're shot. You should go to the hospital. And he's like, I don't do hospitals. And Hardison says, I told you, he takes getting shot very lightly. But he's been shot like in the thigh and through the shoulder.
He's just walking away.
Just real cash. And just like drop that crutch. Crutches are expensive, dude. Like, give it back to the paramedics.
I mean, they probably came over and picked it up.
Yeah. I hope Vance did. Give it back. But yeah, and that's the episode.
It's real good. It's not like a great, this is, I don't know if I can phrase this correctly. It's not a great leverage episode. Like, it's barely a leverage episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's an episode of some other show with the leverage characters guest starring on it. But it's great.
Yeah, it's like an alternate universe.
Yeah.
Which is not to say that it's not an amazing episode, but it's not one that you would be like, hey, you should watch this show, Leverage. Let's start with this one.
Yeah. Because I feel like you would then be very puzzled by the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. And you're like, who are these other two people?
Yeah. Why are there all these weird black and white flashbacks to stuff?
Yeah, I don't get it. Who's the British lady?
Mm-hmm.
We didn't mention him when we started talking about Dr. Udall, because he's unlike most villains, like, we don't get a lot from him. You know, we kind of see him do stuff, but we don't get the evil speech of evil until the very end. And it's more like a unhinged rant than an evil speech of evil. But he's played by Monty Markham.
Oh, that name, though.
Isn't that a great name? Good. Who's kind of like a prolific actor. As I'm like scrolling through his IMDb, he was on Baywatch. He was like the captain on there. He was in several episodes of Golden Girls, Dallas, Heart to Heart, The Love Boat. Fantasy Island. He's just been on a Murder, She Wrote, Melrose Place. So he's been around for a long time, and they were just super stoked that they could. Oh, he was also in Fringe, which is really cool. They were just really excited that they could get him on the show. Like giddy little schoolboys when they were talking about it in the commentary.
That's awesome.
Adorable. Adorable. Yeah, do you have a high slate?
Not exactly, because we're living a heist light right now.
Yeah, I kind of didn't want to look up anything related to this because it was...
But if you find it cathartic to, like, watch shows where people triumph over this plot, Die Hard 4 is basically this plot, except with technology instead of the flu. And the third episode of Numbers ever is basically this exact same plot line, only with like J.K. Simmons and Rainn Wilson, I want to say his name is, that might be wrong. They guest star on it also. It's called Vector. It's basically the same plot. Like, and if you are into the whole like hidden lab thing, because I always think that's cool when there's like a forgotten room that's been left behind. There's a series of techno thrillers that are written by Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child. And several of them, including I think the first one, Relic, which is now quite old. But they're set in the Natural History Museum in New York, and there's a lot of like people moving bookcases and discovering like a long lost Egyptian, you know, display that was there in the 20s that's been bricked over and everyone forgot about it. And it's a plot point that I really love. There's a lot of like, a killer is hunting this person through the bowels of the museum and they must hide somewhere in the room full of dinosaur. Like, it's, I don't know. They're in no way highbrow novels, but I love them.
Yeah.
So if you're into the idea of long lost hidden rooms and like mad scientists, they're pretty good.
Awesome. I do love that.
So, less heist light and more like this. Is kind of what I have to offer.
You know, I think that's totally fair.
Oh, Aldous Hodge was on an episode of Numbers, but it was so early in his career, he wasn't even like the killer. He was like the red herring witness who gets brought in and has one interview scene. And I was like, of course he's going to be the killer. And then he wasn't. And I was like, oh man, it was that early in his.
Dang. Dang. That never happens where I'm like, oh, I know that actor. Oh, nope, they're not even the victim. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything new leverage two wise that has come out since I last recorded a couple days ago. But let's double check real quick. Gina Bellman is always, she's great.
I saw something, I did a Google about it earlier today, and I saw something that was like Leverage 2.0 coming summer of 2021. And I was like, what? There's a date? And it was like not from anywhere.
Oh.
You know, and I thought like, oh, did you just...
What a tease.
Because they like released the Spider-Man
mm-hmm.
title today. And I was like, that's cool. When is Leverage coming out? That's what I need to know. I don't care really about the Spider-Man title.
Right.
I mean, there's only they must be getting close to the end of filming.
Yeah. I'll mention it in the next episode, but John Rogers like confirmed that he is writing episodes for this the reboot.
Oh, good.
So that's really exciting. And I'll discuss the tweets where I'm at in the next episode with Lisa. It's so funny to film, like record these out of order. Yeah, I think that's about, it's all the news that I know. As always, if you're following me on Twitter and you find something, send it to me in case I haven't seen it already.
It'll be last search. Although I'm kind of hoping that because there's been so little news that when it finally comes out, they're going to be like, oh yeah, Leverage debuting next week.
Yeah.
And we'll all be like, what? Okay.
Ooh. Wait. What? Okay. I mean, so I just found a Twitter account called Altius Stunts. And their profile, their like little picture is, it says Leverage Stunts. They're only followed by 141 people, and one of them is Gina Bellman. So
ooh.
I'm going to give them a follow. But they tweeted on the 22nd, brainstorming ideas to make the director's vision come to life. And Beth Rescrap is an amazing director to work for because she's directing at least two episodes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh. Well,
and Noah Wiley's directing two of them.
Nice.
I guess that is one thing though, like if you, with the COVID bubbling that they've had to do,
mm-hmm.
I feel like that probably gives you more opportunity to like direct more of them.
Yeah. You can't bring as many people in.
Yeah. Like that's probably a good time for actors to be like, well, I would like to take on additional roles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which like, if that was me, I'd be like, I can do costumes too.
Right.
It's fine. Everybody, I'll do makeup. Smoky eyes for everyone.
Right. I love it just really seems like they've just moved in to New Orleans. Like Gina Bellman, especially, like she's just been living it up in New Orleans. She loves it. And I find that so charming. Okay. Robin, you're not on social media.
Nope.
Anybody who has questions for Robin or heist movies or shows or miniseries ideas for me can tweet at me at LibrarianStee.
Or if you just want to say hi to her because...
Or if you just want to say hi. Yes.
We're almost to a year since this whole pandemic thing started and we all just want to say hi to people and some social contact.
I know. If you so already
say hi to Stee.
Yes. If you already follow me on Twitter, you know that we're coming up also on the anniversary of me watching and live tweeting the Fast and the Furious franchise. And I will be doing that again on the anniversary. So if you'd like to watch along, we'll be starting on March 17th. Get yourself some Vietnamese food and we'll do this thing.
See, after that, maybe you should watch and tweet along to the Die Hard franchise.
Oh, but is there like a found family in the Die Hard series franchise?
No.
Because I found that's what like really got me in my feelings. Because you know I love found family. It's why I started this podcast.
Like
y'all won't see us again, but you'll hear us again if you want to download the episode right now because I'm going to put up the frame up job the same time I'm putting up this job. And after that, we'll see you in two more weeks. Talk about the low, low price job.
Apparently as a content creator, you can just be like, I would like, can I push a button for a McElroy?
That's what I'm not. I would like to push a button for a McElroy.
Yeah, but only he can pick which McElroy, because that could really backfire on you.
I want it to be like a roulette wheel. The McElroy roulette, and then I'd be happy. Like I think
I don't know, I would worry about it end up being that it would just be like Travis with one of his children being like, hello, here, watch my kid, bye.
You'd
be like,
I would use no button. I think the only time I would hit the button is when I needed maximum chaos, and so it'd be fine whoever showed up.
But what if you really wanted, I feel like I would always be wanting Clint.
No,
or the stepmom because she makes bars apparently. and be like, maybe she made cookies. I'm gonna hit the button, see if cookies come out.
Well, if that would be fine. Like, Griffin's making sous vide, and I'd be like, all right, Griffin, what do you have boiling in water right now? Let's go. That's true. Yeah.
Griffin, like, what do you have in your mouth right now?
What's in your mouth?
Drop it. Drop it.
I'm like having to push my fingers into his mouth to get something out of it.
You try to get to the back to like break the lock on his jaw. But also, well, like, what if it's Travis mid hair dye? You're like, you're getting purple like, all over my rug.
That's fine. All of this is good.
Okay.
All of this is good for me. I think any of that would be hilarious and fun.
Then you can be trusted with the McElroy button.
It'd be like 2 minutes of a McElroy, and then they would get like blipped back to their life. Would they remember it? I don't know. Would they know that it's happening? Is it like being John Malkovich, but like calling the Mac? I don't know. Okay, let's go back to this episode.
I don't know. I'm.
Grifter thief. I'm a leaf.